Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, this is our first episode that we've ever done. We are re-recording it because we've heard from a lot of people how bad it is, how we speak over each other.
Because we do. And it was the first time we ever did it.
It was.
And so we were very nervous.
Didn't understand what we were doing. Not that we know what we're doing now.
We don't.
But it seems that people who listen to podcasts always go to the first episode. So we wanted to re-record this so you would get a little feel of what the podcast is after over a year of podcasting.
Correct.
The next few episodes are still just as bad as the first ones. That's just the way it's going to be. We're not going to re-record all of them. But just so you know, next few are in their original.
We get better.
We do get better. So
move it on down the line.
Keep going. It gets better.
And here you go. In early June of 2018, a man named Captain William Howard Hughes, not that Howard Hughes, different one, had deserted the Air Force 35 years ago and was found living happy in California. Ooh. Under a different name.
So he just left his
life. Apparently got a little depressed about being in the military
like
one day.
Like we all do.
Decided he didn't want to be in it. So he went to 19 different banks and withdrew around $28,000 and just assumed a new identity, a new life.
Just disappeared.
Yep.
It's that easy to do.
So I'm glad you brought that up, Jen. The one thing I think about a lot is disappearing and, you know, it casually goes through your mind. It's been known to happen to a few people. Olivia Newton-John's husband, remember, he disappeared. They didn't know where he was, and then he turned up later. But the thing is, to disappear, to truly disappear, is really hard.
Right.
It's a lot harder than you think.
I would think so.
With all our technology we have today, the cameras are everywhere, social media. We leave a digital footprint each time we do anything, from your phone to your car, anything, anytime you log on anywhere, it can track
right
where you've been. So it is much harder. If you're going to disappear, you need a new social security number. You need a new ID. You need a new identity and a backstory. You need some money and a job because you're going to have to get a job. So you need a new identity and new paperwork to show who you are. You have to be totally quiet about your past life. You have to never mess up.
You also have to know who to ask to go to get a new social security number and all of that. You just can't walk into Walmart and ask.
Correct. So
right?
Our story today is going to talk about somebody mm-hmm. that may or may not have done just that. At 8:42 a.m. on the morning of April 10th, 2001, firefighters receive a call about a natural gas explosion and a house burning in Scottsdale, Arizona. The house was located in the 2000 block of North 74th Place. The explosion was so severe, it collapsed the entire front brick wall. There was a wall, mm-hmm. that, sort of like a retaining wall, I guess, of the house to separate it from, you know, the area.
Separate it like the backwoods,
yes,
area?
Yeah. It was so hot that that fire just melted that wall.
Oh, geez.
The explosion was so harsh, it could be felt in the neighboring houses for over half a mile in all directions. A series of smaller secondary explosions believed to be either caused by gunfire, ammunition, rather, right, in the house, or paint cans exploding, forced the firemen to keep their distance because,
right,
they didn't really know what they were dealing with. All they could do is see and hear stuff.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to rush in thinking, I'm assuming you couldn't tell the difference between a gas explosion and a pain explosion.
You'd have to get in there and find out.
There's no way I'd go in.
Upon investigation, authorities determined the blaze appeared to be centered in the living room of the house. Soon, they discovered it was no accidental explosion after all. So, Jen, what exactly set off that explosion? The gas line from the back of the house's furnace had been pulled in into the house and was allowing natural gas to fill the home.
Ooh.
And apparently, the person who set the house up for this explosion had placed a single candle on the floor of the room. Now, natural gas, as you may or may not know, is a lighter gas, so it floats to the top first. Mm-hmm. And as it fills an encased room, a room that does not have any ventilation, the gas fumes, or gas, I guess, are going to expand and finally reach the candle. So it's sort of it's a good way to set up the house to where the arsonist would be able to escape safely and get a nice distance away.
So basically, it's the opposite of filling up a jug of water, where the water starts at the bottom and then rises to the top. With the natural gas, it starts at the top and goes to the bottom.
Correct. This delayed fuse allowed the perpetrator who did this to have approximately a 10-hour head start to get away from law enforcement and firemen, fire people, firefighters.
Firefighters.
When they came to deal with the blaze. Investigators and firefighters are on scene. They suspect that there was a little bit of foul play. So they're busy trying to put out the blaze and ensure the neighbors and the community safety. As soon as they get the fire extinguished, they enter the house and they are shocked to find the charred remains of three individuals. The people that they find would turn out to be Mary Fisher, age 38, and her two children, identified as Brittany, age 12, and Bobby, age 10. They were lying in their bed when the place went up in flames.
So they were asleep.
You would think that
goodness,
they were asleep.
Right?
Both children had had their throats slit.
Oh, no.
And Mary had a gunshot wound to her head, as well as her throat slit.
That's horrible.
Robert Fisher, the father
and
husband, was nowhere to be found.
Hmm.
Immediately, the family began to panic and worry. They were thinking that maybe he was abducted, he was taken, that he was murdered as well, and they didn't know where he was.
Like it was a break and entering thing?
Stranger yet, Mary's car was missing. Investigators are starting to wonder if maybe he was
involved, maybe?
Or kidnapped, and they stole the car.
Now, being true crime fanatics, we immediately would assume that
everybody's guilty. Of course.
He's guilty. Well, he's the husband. They always do it, right? That's what we learned from Dateline.
Of course. Don't light up a room with a smile either.
Never.
Investigators begin to dive into the backgrounds of both Robert and Mary Fisher to see if anything sticks out. Robert and Mary had been married 16 years. Robert was a U.S. Navy veteran, starting his working life as a firefighter. You know. But he suffered a back injury and had to change careers. And apparently, this did not make him very happy. And it actually caused a lot of stress and strife in their marriage. His love was being a fireman.
Right.
That's what he wanted to
do.
And
I would hope that the police finding out that he was an ex-fireman might have raised a red flag.
You'd think. He had begun working as a respiratory therapist. Robert was actually really very bright. He was a hunter and he owned several guns, which would make you own ammunition in the house. He had taxidermied animals all over the house. Many would say that he was a good hunter. He knew a lot about guns. He knew a lot about hunting, and he was a really intelligent man.
And he knew a lot about setting fires.
Well, he is a fireman. So, Jen, you and I in the true crime world, we always know that everything is not as it seems. The marriage looked to be a good one from the outside, from the others who surrounded themselves with the Fishers.
It always does. You've got your Facebook relationships, and then you've got your actual
You got the one you put out
life.
There for everybody to see, and then you got the real one. There were some cracks, as there always happened to be. Or should I say infections?
Infections? Like STDs infections?
Yes, that would be correct, Jen. Yes. It seems Robert had visited a massage parlor due to that severe back injury he had. And at the massage parlor, he met a little lady and proceeded to have a one-night stand with her. well, she wasn't really a masseuse. She was a prostitute. And he ended up coming home with a few problems, including a urinary tract infection.
Wow. So it was it what a, how do you say, a happy good time massage parlor?
Yes.
And it wasn't like a real chiropractor?
Correct. I mean, I would, yes, I would.
It was a happy ending type.
Yes, that would
massage.
Be correct.
Oh, good.
So the guilt got to Robert about what he had done, not to mention he's
the
infectious,
fungus, yeah.
Right? So he admits to Mary that he was unfaithful to her, and they struggled with this, and they went to the pastor and decided to divulge that information to the pastor in hopes of getting some guidance and some counseling to make the marriage work and to get past this, you know,
right,
unfaithfulness.
The little snag in the relationship.
The couple belonged to the Scottsdale Baptist Church, and they were very active members in the church and the community, and Robert was even in the men's ministry. They weren't just a Sunday
go-meeting Christian.
Yes. Mary was trying to get over this. She really was, but she was furious.
Oh, yeah.
She was just upset.
And do you blame her? I mean, it's one thing for your husband to have an affair with a coworker or just somebody he meets at a bar, but to go to a prostitute and get a disease to get the...
So after Mary calmed down, it took a little time, but after she calmed down, she decided that she did want to try to make the marriage work and try to stay together. They did have the two kids, and they had been together already for a long time, and they wanted to try to work it out. Now, an interesting thing to say here is that Robert's parents had divorced when Robert was 15 years old, and apparently this left Robert with a little bit, I guess it had a negative impact on him. He decided to live with his father, who then remarried, and he was furious. He did not believe in divorce. Robert did not believe in divorce. In fact, he said once that he would choose suicide over divorce, that you did not get divorced. That was not an option in Robert's world. I guess his stepmother was not very kind to him.
Stepmonster.
And the whole thing was just negative to him. And we all know people that don't believe you get divorced. You're married for life no matter what.
But there's a difference between, there's a huge difference between committing suicide and
but
divorce,
that gives us
especially
a little,
in religious upbringing.
That gives us a little insight into his psyche.
Right.
That's why I put that in there. As a father, it was reported that he was very stern, but he was also loving towards his children. Now, you got to remember, he very well could have been portraying to those around him what he wanted them to see, which is often the case with people that go on to do things like this,
correct,
right? They
mm-hmm.
they can very, they're good at leading two different lives.
Well, like we said before, there's two sides to people. There's the social media side and the real side.
While he was loving with his children, and that wasn't doubted, he was very controlling with Mary and the house, how the house was set up, how it was to look, how it was maintained. He was very controlling, almost obsessive about that. As a matter of fact, Mary's friends later reported that she was actually thinking of, or maybe even planning, to divorce Robert.
Ooh, that wouldn't
it was
go
getting
over well.
That bad.
He sounds like a fun guy, though.
So, you know, a lot can be told about what happened when you look at the days or day leading up to the crime. So let's take a look at Robert, what he did the day before, and see if you think there are some, these would be the actions of a person about to commit such a heinous crime mm-hmm. and then go MIA. The day before the house explosion, Robert went and changed the oil in his car. Not the one he would later disappear in, not Mary's car, okay, but his car.
Mm-hmm.
Seemingly letting you think that he's going to be using that car again.
Right.
He also put new insulation in the attic of the house. During the evening hours, Robert took his daughter Brittany to her junior National Honor Society induction. Mary took Bobby to his hunting classes that were being held at the church. At around 10 p.m., neighbors reported hearing a loud argument between Robert and Mary. They could hear screaming and fighting coming from the house. Approximately 10:40 p.m., Robert Fisher leaves his house to visit an ATM where a photo of him at the machine clearly shows Robert collecting money from the ATM.
Hmm. And this was after the fight.
Correct. At this point, authorities are clear that that is Robert visiting the ATM at the bank. But what they're not sure about is if his family had been murdered yet, right?
Right. They don't know time of death.
They cannot tell time of death due to the explosion. At the ATM, you can clearly see Mary's car in the background. of the photo. Mm-hmm. So it tends to make you think that maybe he had already killed them and was leaving town.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's kind of what I would think.
Because you would think he would take his car.
Here's the part you're going to love, Jen.
All right.
He took his dog with him.
Oh, yeah, of course.
At least he was looking out for the dog.
Yeah, you can't kill the dog.
Right. So the weird part is, you need to know how much Robert would take out of the bank. You're getting ready to skip town.
Right.
Or the police are wondering this.
You withdraw everything that you mm-hmm. would mm-hmm. have.
So Robert Fisher was very controlling with his money, his house, his everything, right. financial records. So he had 401k, IRAs, money markets, etc. He had savings account, checking account. You got it. So how much money did he withdraw?
All of it, right?
No. $280.
That's it.
That is it. Which is also a weird amount, right?
Was there a limit? Because, you know, but sometimes, like, ours is 600, or it was. I don't know.
Why wouldn't you get up? Okay, so we'll get to that. Authorities are a little stunned at mm-hmm. that he would only take out $280. So they're wondering now, is this premeditated? What was going on? Why did this occur? Was this a split-second decision? Like, did he snap and murder his family? Or had he been working up to this and had planned out the crime? One of the biggest supporters of Robert immediately following the crime was, in fact, Mary's father. So that would be Robert's father-in-law, Bill Cooper, who believed that Robert could have never committed such a heinous crime. Mm-hmm. And he said, quote, "You want to know about my Robert? He was the greatest dad, the greatest husband. I miss him. I miss him. I miss him terribly. I miss him almost as much as I miss my daughter," end quote. As the days went on, Cooper began to realize that Robert had to be involved in this heinous murder of his daughter and beautiful grandchildren. Bill Cooper, sadly, never got any answers to the loss of his daughter as he passed away in 2009.
Oh, that's awful. How heartbreaking for him.
After the ATM appearance, there were a few sightings that police received. A woman had called in and said that she and her husband were driving, and they say they saw a man come out of the woods that they believed to be Robert Fisher. They started calling the authorities after they got home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cell phone days. You don't have right. them in your car, so you would wait till you got home. There was a bartender at the Rye Creek Diner located nearby, and she said a couple had come in. The woman went to use the restroom, and the man ordered a drink, and both were acting very strange and bickering. They were fighting and arguing. The next night, someone called authorities to say someone was ringing their doorbell, and upon answering it, it was a woman who said she had just gotten into an argument with her boyfriend, and he had just dumped her in the middle of the road, dumped her on the road, right. side of the road. The couple that was seen earlier in the restaurant bar fighting, and this woman had similarities. So
it's possible.
Police are wondering that they were, maybe Robert was having an affair. This woman was having an affair with Robert. They planned to make their getaway, got in a big fight, whatever.
And he dumped her. But you would think that she would go to the police and confess. And, well, I don't know.
So the thing is, Jen, you know, after these vicious things come out, usually the truth comes out. If somebody's having an affair, the police tend to find that out pretty soon. I mean, there's always some signs or somebody tells. So I think I'm just not so sure about that girlfriend scenario.
If he dumped her out, you would think that she would go to the police. And
unless she really didn't know he was married and had kids. And maybe that. But then I don't think he would. If he's on the lam, I don't think he's going to dump his girlfriend out. I mean, he just killed his wife and his beautiful babies. I don't think he'd think twice about killing his girlfriend. Here we go. Fast forward to April 20th. Now, this is 10 days after the house explosion. A man was camping up in northern Arizona near Young, Arizona. And he called the police stating that he saw a car that resembled Robert Fisher's car, which was actually Mary's car, mm-hmm. in the Tonto National Park. The authorities then summoned a Ranger helicopter and did a flyover. The vehicle was, in fact, confirmed to be the missing vehicle of Mary Fisher. Police could not be sure how long that the car had been ditched there in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Robert, remember, he was an avid hunter. He was right. big into the hunting, and he was really familiar with the area. Police are now pretty confused as to why he would take Mary's car in there.
And then leave it.
Did somebody pick him up? Did he hike out? Maybe he was just trying to confuse police this whole time, and he did that on purpose and had a backup plan.
But where's the dog?
I'm glad you said that, Jen.
Are you? Are you really?
I am. So if you think about this, all right, there's some charred bodies in the Fisher household.
There's three. One had a slit throat and a bullet wound, and the other two had slit throats.
Correct. So with the police finding the car in the woods, in the forest, and it was Mary's, in fact, mm-hmm. that makes you tend to believe that Robert Fisher planned this on purpose. So when those charred bodies of the family members were found, they're going to be unrecognizable at first. I mean, you might be able to tell it's a body, but you can't tell if it's female, male necessarily, right?
Depending on how bad. With explosions, I would think that they would be
so bad. If there's one missing and one car is gone, that makes you kind of believe that maybe that is the person that took the car. So Mary would be the one that took the car. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So Robert took her car to mislead police so that that would buy him more time and they would think that Mary was in fact the one that was gone.
Right.
However, police actually were able quite quickly to figure out it was Mary Fisher and Robert was the one missing in his car, her car.
Well, you would think that Robert would be taller than Mary, most likely.
Another thought was that Robert Fisher's car was actually a diesel truck. And a diesel truck, it's bigger, it's louder, it's more mm-hmm. expensive. It's also more recognizable than some little, you know, sensible mom car. So that thought had crossed their mind as well. It's less conspicuous to...
Well, if he's going to be leaving in the dead of night, that you don't want to start up your diesel engine truck, you'd wake your neighbors. Your neighbors would say...
Correct.
I heard his car go.
As I mentioned, the car was located in Tonto National Forest. The area where the car was found had several caves nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And authorities started to think that maybe Robert Fisher went and hid in one of those caves. You know, was going to kind of wait till the hoo-ha of finding the car and all
right.
that stuff happened.
Yeah, people will be looking for him in cities or towns, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't, if he goes up in a hole like Osama bin Laden did, you know, it's mm-hmm. harder to find.
Robert Fisher had, since he was ex-military, he had pretty good survival
right.
skills out there. But the thing was, is that when they got there and they searched the car, there were no knives located missing or in the car. No guns were up there. But the one thing that the police did note, and this was odd, but he was an odd fellow, that the car was extremely clean. So clean, as in wiped down clean.
Oh, really?
Police bring the car in and they search it. They want to see if they can find anything. As I said, it was pretty wiped clean. Unfortunately, they find nothing in the car.
No hair?
As in nothing.
Not even dog hair?
As in finding one fingerprint on a coffee mug and some DNA on a hat. DNA, I'm guessing, was a strand of hair or something on a hat that was left in the car.
Or maybe sweat.
The fingerprint was Robert's, which places him in Mary's car.
Which could have been any time.
Exactly.
They both own the car.
Another strange thing, and I don't even know what this means. This totally threw me. But there was human feces near the door of the car. Now, he was in the woods. Lots of places to go to the bathroom. Why would he go to the bathroom right next to the car door?
So he had something to lean on when he squatted, maybe?
Yeah, but there's trees. You're in the middle of the woods. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
His beloved dog was found under the car. He was not chained up and had made himself a little area under the car. Poor puppy.
So he took the dog from the house.
He took the dog from the house.
But abandoned him in the woods.
At that spot.
And he thought the dog could hunt and care for himself.
Or help him.
Or,
I don't know,
he would be able to survive. I mean, chances are pretty good that the dog wouldn't have survived the explosion.
I'm glad he didn't chain him up because the dog would have never made it.
No. But he really couldn't have taken the dog either because people would, well, there's a guy with a dog that looked exactly
like
Robert
Fisher. And also, what do dogs do? Bark.
Only if there's barred owls.
But it's also, that's going to, you know what I mean? That's going to alert you.
Well, he needed to be as plain as possible and a dog would drag it, give you attention.
Perhaps he brought the dog and was going to move on with his life and, you know, decided to change his mind. Or maybe this scenario, I think, would make more sense, that once they got out into the woods, maybe, you know, doggos, they see something, rabbit, squirrel, they're gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the dog ran off.
That's true.
And he was just kind of stuck. And that would make sense. The dog would come back to the car, because I keep thinking if he walked away from the car and the dog's not chained up, dogs follow you, you know? The dog would follow him. So I think, to me, that makes more sense.
The dog could have run away and maybe somebody picked him up and they needed to get out of there and they didn't have time to find the dog. And so they just had to leave him. Maybe. I don't know. But it's odd that he would save the dog and then not take him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings us to our next point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he didn't know what he was going to do. Maybe it was a fit of rage and he lost it on his family.
That's what I'm guessing.
So he brought the dog and then realized, wait, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. I can't do this. I can't go form a new identity and go on. And so maybe he went up there and then decided to, you know, kill himself. And then the dog was left.
He's too in control. He wouldn't kill himself.
Or he could have disappeared into the woods or a cave and just kind of hung out there until everybody came and collected the dog and the car and then, you know, skirted on out to Mexico or Canada or one of those things. But there is something else.
There always is.
There always is. I didn't mention this earlier. All of his clothes were missing from his house. Investigators get in there, you know, all his clothes are gone. Not just like a weekend suitcase. All of them are gone. So it's kind of weird to think that if you would have lost it with your family and killed them, you're not going to pack up all your clothes unless you did that earlier, right? Which leads you to believe it was premeditated. If he left his clothes, it would have been more realistic to think that he had planned to commit suicide. I don't really think you need your whole wardrobe.
No.
If you, I think you're going to be thinking beyond what's going to happen, right? You're thinking rationally as to what's going to happen. All of his guns in his collection were accounted for, except for one. And that was the gun that they believed that was used to shoot Mary. So the thought is he took that gun with him. Police have received leads from everywhere, as you can imagine. There was a couple in Guatemala who were taking some pics and a man in the background. You know, they were taking like family pics, and there was a stranger in the background, and he became irate that his photo was being taken, and he demanded that they give him their camera. And they, you know, were like, absolutely not. The couple said that he looked like Robert Fisher. In August 2001, a week after the case was featured on America's Most Wanted, a call came in saying, this is kind of creepy, "This is Robert Fisher. I'm glad I killed the bitch, and you will never find me." Authorities were unable to determine if that was, in fact, Robert Fisher. And who knows?
Who knows?
You know, that brings them all in.
There's so many freaks out there. I mean, that happens to a lot of cases.
There was a lead in 2004 in which Canada had contacted the United States, and they were holding a man in custody that they believed to be Robert Fisher. He had similar markings that Robert Fisher had. He had a missing tooth like Robert Fisher. He had a scar on his back like Robert Fisher from that back injury, back surgery. But his fingerprints did not match. Now, we know John Dillinger, he remedied that, put a little acid on his. So maybe that was him. Maybe it wasn't.
It's a weird coincidences, though. I mean.
Right. Robert Fisher does have a few characteristics that he cannot change. He has a strange walk due to the back injury.
Mm-hmm.
He chews tobacco or chewed tobacco, and he likes to hunt and fish. He's very good at that and would do it often, so much so weekly. Like it would kind of be a thing with him and his wife that would be a source of contention. Most notably, he is extremely controlling in relationships. Someone may be out there with somebody that's very controlling. They may notice this. They may think something about this. I'm like pleading to the audience right now.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So if you know anything, say something. If you know something, say something.
Today, Robert Fisher is still on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. There's an agent that said he very well believes he is alive and well, and we all know that this is code for that they know something, but they can't tell us. So they advise for us to be on the lookout for Robert Fisher. There is a $100,000 reward for information leading to Robert Fisher. So Jen, what's your theories? What do you think?
Here's my theory. Mary had enough, packed up all of Robert's stuff, and was going to tell him to get out. And Robert lost it because he is the control freak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had been planning this for a long time. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think
I'd agree.
This set him off.
Well, I think knowing him with his military background, and he was very smart. He probably had thought, if this ever happens, I'm going to do this. Mm. So if Mary is going to leave me, she's not going to leave me. I'm going to do this.
Right.
I think that part was definitely premeditated in his head.
Either I have her or no one does. Put the poor kids in there. Seriously. That always confuses me. I don't know how people can do that to their own flesh and blood. Somebody that they created. I don't understand that.
I guess in his head.
But you would think too, here, if you were planning all this out and you'd been planning it for a long time, you think he would have a better means of escape?
I don't know. He never got caught, so I'd say he had pretty good means of escape. Good. I think the thing about him, too,
is... thought it would think the dog thing through more.
Well, yeah, but you love the dog. You bring the dog with you. Maybe he hiked out of there, and the dog just... I don't know. Maybe he was like, nobody's going to pick up a hitchhiker with a dog, especially a male hitchhiker with a dog. You would. Most people would not.
Well, it's obvious he did it, and obviously he's out there somewhere.
I just kind of think that he's so... if he would have committed suicide, say if he went in a cave and committed suicide, because he does, that is the one missing gun, why? I just would think that he'd want his body found, but maybe not. Maybe he was so conceited in that controlling nature that he did not. It's on my terms. I'm going to commit suicide, but I'm going to do it. I'm not going to go to jail. I'm not going to, you know.
And it's going to be a mystery. Nobody's ever going to solve this.
Yep. And you know,
to be out there.
I've been intrigued with this case for a long time just because it's so shocking to me that there is absolutely nothing. And a long time ago, I was like, no way. No way could he disappear. There's just no way. And then Whitey Bulger was found in Santa Monica, living right there in that apartment complex under everybody's nose. And I was like, you know what? You could. You really could.
I think people are so involved with their own everyday life that you don't notice.
We would, because we're nosy, but
no, I don't... but you would not just say, well, you'd think, huh, that guy kind of looks like Robert Fisher, but he's, you know, he seems nice, and you wouldn't just, like, I'm not the type to rat out anybody unless I see them do something.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't call the FBI on my neighbor saying, you know, I think this guy's Robert Fisher. He looks like him. He's got a weird walk.
I'd call you and be like, Jen, you got to get up here. This neighbor, you got, something's going on.
I would like, well, you know what? Maybe we should call. But then, God, I don't want to waste the FBI's time.
If they're innocent, then they're going to hate me and I got to live with them.
Right.
As my neighbor.
But yeah, I think it does happen. We're all consumed with our life so much that we don't notice things around us. And I always tell my daughter, I'm like, you might think people notice what you do, but everybody's consumed with themselves and worried about themselves that they're not even going to care about what you do.
So true.
You know, they're worried about what you think of them while you're worried about what they think of you. It, just don't worry about it.
It's easier that way.
Right.
So the good people out there, if you have any ideas or you want to leave us any comments about this story or if there's anything new that I missed.
We need to add.
Because like we said
earlier,
this is a re-record of the other
episodes. And do us a favor, if this is your first time listening to us, go to some of our later episodes.
They're better.
Listen to them all the way through. We have an actual editor now, and he's editor/producer/editor. His name is Nico. He is awesome. He takes care of us, and he makes our episodes 100% better.
It's true.
Listen to those episodes before you judge. The next couple ones are going to be bad.
They're not even
they're
that
not bad.
They get better. It's a learning curve. That's it. So anyway, thanks, Jen. Why don't you tell the good people where they can find us?
You can find us on Twitter, handle @OurTrueCrimePod. You can find us on our blog at www.OurTrueCrimePodcast.com. You can also send us a very nice, pleasant email that we will enjoy to read at OurTrueCrimePodcast@gmail.com. And rate and review us, if you will, please. Be nice.
Yeah. We did get a better handle on how to do this podcast thing from that first episode. So, you know.
You like it.
That's it. So remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya.
Jen. Oh, sorry. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Am I talking too fast?
Well, you're just not giving me any pauses to, like,
work
in. And
this is weird. This is not written like I write today.
Right.
I've gotten the hang of it and what to keep in and what not. And this is the original script. Even with the Jen says, Jen asks. Okay, here we go.
Work. Okay.
I know, right? That's just weird. So it's you weird
can,
to read this.
So what you can do is just take your time and reword it.
It's not that long.
That's what she said.
I know, right? They actually...
That made me want to sing The Day the Squirrel Went Berserk. You don't know that one?
Nope. And this left him with, I guess, a little bit of an imprint, a little bit of a bad taste in his mouth. He lived with his father. What?
Bad taste in his mouth going to a prostitute, but that was just my making it.
It says here, Jen, so was this before or after the family was murdered?
You are such a dork.
Like, I have to write questions for you. I can't get you to shut up. If only you asked three questions.
You were trying to script my questions so you would
this
have the answers.
This was the very first script we wrote, and I was trying to get you to get me, you know what I mean?
Like, you would have any problems putting me in a conversation.
That's what I said. Like, I'm thinking you wouldn't say anything with the Fisher, see?
So, Cam, was this before or after the family was found murdered?
This is... Wait, what? Full body chills.
Full body chills.
So was this after or?
So wait, what? Was this before or after?
No, you gotta talk slower. She talks slower. Wait, what? Wait, what? Was this before? Okay, sorry. Okay. We'll go back to that. All right. So right here, Jen, it says, Jen, so has he ever been seen again? Nico didn't even know us then.
No.
All right.
Oh, Nico.
Jen, why do you think he took Mary's car? Was it to confuse police as to who was inside and who was gone in the car? Good stuff. It cracks me up.
And this was just a little over a year ago.
Hey, we didn't know.
We didn't.
I hadn't even listened to Crime Punkies yet. That the car was extremely clean. So clean, as in wiped down clean.
Oh, really? Vacuumed, wiped down, no DNA.
Jen makes joke about clean car. That's good stuff.
You're a nerd, man. It's almost like reading like eighth grade.
Jen, this was our first script.
No, I know.
We didn't even know what we were doing.
We still don't know what we're doing. Are you kidding me?
Okay.